Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. This is the midweek edition, which would technically be the match preview for Bournemouth. But of course, there's a little bit of a special twist to this one because Aston Villa have officially booked their ticket to the Carabao Cup final facing Manchester City. We're recording this on a Wednesday night, so it's now confirmed. Of course, I am not here alone. I am with my good friend. You can be my fan too if you want.
I'm a fan of you. I'm a big fan of you.
How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing well, mate. I'm doing well. I'm just delighted to see two last-minute wins under Villa's belt in the space of a week. We have not been known as good finishers this season. That has not been our brand. But, oh boy, what a win. That felt absolutely magic against Leicester.
I couldn't be more happier with that. And I mean, some people probably look at this and think, oh, we're getting a lot of last-minute winners. And that's great to see. And some people will probably be negative and think, oh, we should have this polished off earlier on. But what a way to win it, especially in a cup match. I mean, of course, if we roll down the goal scorers here, Matty Target chips in with the first. And of course, that man for Leicester, Kelechi Iheanacho, gets his equalizer because apparently he loves to score against the Villa. Doesn't he have like an insane record against us, Danny?
I think it's got to be like, I think it's 8-5 now, I want to say.
Well, he's captured some of that form he had with Man City from a couple seasons ago, for sure. Just against us, apparently, that's it. So it's good to see his contributions, at least earning his paycheck for Leicester. But of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Trezeguet gets the winner from, you know what? It's the Egyptian connections. It's the Egyptian Airlines. What a ball from Elmo to link that up. And you know what, Danny, we're gonna skip right ahead to the winner here and talk about that first, because when I look at that, I'm so excited when I talk about it, because it was just one of those things where this might be a nothing ball. It's a hope and a prayer. It's a similar thing to Pepe Reina's loft up, and of course Tyrone Mings scoring against Watford. It's kind of similar to that. It's a hope and a prayer situation, and he tucks it away quite neatly. How did you feel about that goal? Did it send you into hysteria? And how do you feel about facing Manchester City next?
Yeah, I guess we'll come back to that goal in a bit. But like, I think for sure, what I will say is that it was unexpected. Although I did have a feeling. You can look back at my tweets. I did have a feeling that El Mohamedy was going to come on and do something. Didn't score a goal, but it was brilliant. Yeah, the Egyptian link up, as you say, and it was late on. And you mentioned, you know, that a lot of people might say that we're getting sort of like late lucky winners and that kind of thing. But this is actually the whole Dean Smith counter attack at its best, actually, isn't it? This is now the snatch and grab. Like this is what's supposed to happen. You're supposed to sync up pressure, and you're supposed to be able to take it on and then deliver a sucker punch, in turn basically making your opponents have to work harder. That's, you know, that is how our counter-attacking system is supposed to work. What it relies on is obviously, you know, mistakes not happening and that kind of thing. But there you go. Great to see, you know, the Villa lads fighting right up until the finish.
100%, and I think it's fair to mention that this is our first cup final since the 2015 FA Cup final, where we lost 4-0 against Arsenal. So hopefully we don't suffer the same fate or worse against Man City. Of course, we'll have that preview up closer to the match, which I believe is on March 1st. So there's some time and some important fixtures ahead of them to focus on. But getting deeper into this game, of course, let's get into the first goal, because it comes in the 12th minute. You had Jack Grealish holding up the ball on the left-hand side of Leicester City's box, weaving around with his magical little feet, of course. I shouldn't say little, but he does have feet, of course, and I have to say something. But he's weaving in and out, holding the ball up, and Matty Target loves to bomb for it, as he always does. Collects the ball off of Grealish and slots it neatly across Kasper Schmeichel. Almost said Peter there. That would have been a throwback. and of course, that makes it 1-0. And you have to look at this goal, Danny, as a crucial moment, because Villa typically do not start well in matches. And this goal is 12 minutes in. And would you actually think this is our quickest goal of the season so far? Like, against decent opposition? Because I'm struggling to think of any time we've scored early this season.
Yeah, we don't tend to snatch goals too early on, but I mean, I think this was, it wasn't that early, was it? 13th minute? I mean, I think it was 11th minute, right? So, I mean, I think the thing is, what a lot of people were saying in and around the office that I was talking to, you know, about the whole game was, you know, the idea that Villa really needed an early goal here. You know, they couldn't be chasing this game. That really would have put Villa under some pressure, like, heavily. You know, if they were able to go out there against Leicester and grab a goal early, that would settle some nerves. And that is what, you know, that is the purpose that it served. And I mean, up until that point as well, you'd say probably Leicester looked like, you know, they came out the better side. But I mean, even then, Villa were creating chances. It was just a very high energy game. And you just had that feeling that somebody's going to break, and whoever breaks, well, it's on them really to chase. And it was good to see that Matty Target was just running that flank for the first 10 minutes incredibly well. It looked like he wanted to score goals. It really looked like Matty Target was out there to do something. Dare I say, I think this was his best game in a Villa shirt so far. 100%. I thought it was brilliant to see that from him. Him and Gilbert had an absolute cracker, but up until that point, good to see. And Grealish finding him eventually. Matty Target coming in there like he's a forward. And I think it's almost reminiscent of the old sort of Serie A style fullbacks who are really expected to kind of do both roles. That's the whole idea of this system.
Oh, 100%. I think it's fair to say, Danny, that both our fullbacks have found their role and they're very comfortable in that role. But to get away from that for 2 seconds, I want to mention Jack Grealish because he comes into two stats here. The first one being he's been directly involved in 16 goals across all competitions for Villa this season. Mm-hmm. That equals 9 goals and 7 assists. That's more than any other Premier League midfielder. The other interesting fact about the first goal, Danny, of course, is Matty Target has scored 2 goals this season, and they've both been assisted by Jack Grealish. Now, this is an obvious question, but one I think that we have to ask nonetheless. How important is this man going forward, and not even this season? We won't focus on the season right now, just going into the cup final.
Going into the cup final, it's exactly what you need. You want serious leadership. You want somebody who's going to pull the team together, and I think Grealish is absolutely the kind of player that you need, especially against Manchester City. The way to beat them is, you know, you need to have personalities. We saw in the last game against City that if you bow your heads down and decide that, and in fact in that game, by the way, Grealish pretty much did all of the work. It was mm-hmm. It was really, really sad to watch. But if Villa go out there against Man City and it's 11 Jack Grealish's, if everybody shows the passion that Jack Grealish shows, and if they can follow his lead, then I think that's the only real way to win that tie.
I'd say so. I think there has to be an honorable mention for Marvelous Nakamba in this game, because honestly, in my opinion, this is one of his best games of the season. The man was on fire, and he was honestly playing that Conte role to perfection for the most part. The amount of passes, surges of play going towards the Villa box, he broke up with ease. The high pressure situations from a corner, a set piece, that he was able to clear it or bring it out of our own box to set something up moving forward. I think, Danny, I don't know if you feel the same way. Would you say that's maybe his best game so far in a Villa shirt?
I don't know. I thought he played incredibly well in the last game too. The game against who was it that we just beat 2-1 Watford. I thought he had a great game against Watford and Nakamba. I think as of late he seems to be really enjoying himself. And this is no shade to Danny Drinkwater, but I think in there with Douglas Luiz, he seems to really be making that position his own. I think it's the two of them together that kind of work really well. I think he gets an added bit of energy with Luiz. He has somebody ready to collect that ball off him. I think in that formation as well, he's always got somebody to the left of him. Whatever happens with Villa at the moment, with that sort of system that they've got in place, 3-4-3, for any of the midfielders, for any of the players out there, they just seem to have an extra second of time. And you almost felt that was the thing with Nakamba. Always seemed a bit rushed. Always seemed like he was too far under pressure and he needed that extra second. Well, now it seems like he's got it. And because of that, I think he's settling into that position brilliantly. And I did think he had a great game against Leicester. You've got to take into account that they've got Tielemann and Ndidi in there. You know, that the two of them together, very energetic midfielders. You've got to 100%. Work very hard to beat that side.
Yeah, I think the thing that helps, especially the two central midfielders for Villa in this 3-4-3 especially, is now that you have your fullbacks pushed up a little bit higher, there's that whole kind of assurance now that, say, if Nakamba is out of position or whoever's playing beside him in that moment, I think there's that great kind of notion that Matty Target can cut in a little bit and fill that gap if we're on kind of conceding a counter, or if someone's bombing forward, even Nakamba can come out wide and cut off that space. I think this formation, honestly, is, I don't know if Dean Smith has been playing with this idea for a while. It seemed obviously like the 4-3-3 was kind of dead to us. It just didn't work. But with this switch in formation, Danny, we're getting off topic from the match a little bit. Do you think he's been plotting this for a while? Like, I've been kind of curious that myself, and I haven't asked that yet.
I don't think we're going off topic at all, because I thought that game was I think it was the perfect example of why that formation is so important to us and why it works so well. And I think with the striker up there as well, that's also a case where we've basically seen it at play brilliant. I think we've only seen that formation in an ideal situation once with Wesley up top. All right, you can talk about Kodja, but he hasn't looked very good for Villa at all. But yeah, I don't think Dean Smith was plotting it, because we stuck with that 4-3-3 for a very long time before changing it up. We were calling for it for a long time, this switch. Matty Target and Fred Gilbert, they are the keys in this formation, really. Talk about Jack Grealish, but he'd play equally well in the other formations. He's always been playing out wide like that. I'd say the defenders as well, Hawes, Mings and Goyo, all three of them seem to look more comfortable in that formation. Brilliant to have Mings back, but Gilbert and Target, it relies on their work rate. It relies on them saying, okay, we're happy to bomb down, bomb up and down the pitch, whether that be attacking, whether that be defending. But it's also a formation that relies on everybody to cover each other. Sometimes Target is a little bit further up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he has ventured up there to help Jack Grealish. But that's okay, because Courtney Hawes can cover that left-hand side. Or Gilbert might have to go up a little bit further to help out Ogazi. But that's okay, because Konza can slip in on that right-hand side. Really, against Leicester, it just seemed to work so well. Gilbert found himself in so much space ahead of Barnes. Chilwell almost seemed stuck back there. Matty Target again as well. Just him and Pereiro had an absolute battle out there.
Oh, totally. 100%. Honestly, maybe it's bold. I think this has been our best performance in this 3-4-3. Just the fact that it's Leicester, where they are, how well they're doing this season. And it was clear there was no fear, because you could look at previous games this season. You could tell we're on the back foot. You could tell we're gassed out. You could tell we're frustrated. There's no ideas moving forward or even defending. In this game, it was just back and forth. Yes, we conceded some possession. I think they had 62. We had 38, although it didn't really feel like that at times. There was a lot of back and forth. And for the first time, probably, to be honest, this season, I felt, okay, we're going to concede here in terms of the amount of counterattacks we're going to have. And yes, I think they had around 22 shots with 6 on target, but there isn't a lot of times this match, Danny, where I felt, oh, we're going to lose here. And that's something that's been with us all season.
I mean, I kind of started feeling it after Kelechi scored.
Do you think so? Because I didn't.
Well, Villa did kind of... They played well for a little bit after that. And then sort of in that last... I mean, once it hit the sort of 80-minute mark, it almost seemed as though Leicester have all of the ball here. If we let them keep that ball too long...
As expected, though.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think, as you say, a lot of possession from Leicester. But if we're going to get back into the sort of meat of that match...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their chances, a lot of the shots that they took, they had 22 shots in comparison to our 9. But when you look at their shots, so many of them were coming from long range. It felt like they'd identified something in training. It felt like they'd identified something with Brendan Rodgers in terms of what is Orion Nyland's weakness. Maybe they've been prepared for Pepe Reina. I don't know. But they kept shooting from range. And it kept on happening, Cole. I don't know if you remember, but Nyland having to slip to his left and right so many times in that first half.
He was amazing. Best match in a Villa shirt by far.
Oh, yeah. This is his best game so far. That was Ryan Nyland. Fully developed. You forget that the guy's 29 sometimes.
It's crazy to think, Danny. I'm getting off topic again, but we have three keepers, technically. Obviously, one's on loan that I have full confidence in right now. And I don't remember the last time that's ever happened.
I don't know. I mean, are you fully confident with Nyland? Is he not? So he had a great game against Leicester, and he had a great game in the last game, I think it was against Leicester. I can't remember. But he's also just, he decides when to turn up, doesn't he? I'm not saying he decides to, but he can be one way or the other, right?
I think when it comes to him, I think he's one of those keepers, and this can apply to any sport, where he's just one of those guys that needs to face a lot of shots to kind of get into rhythm, to get into that comfortable focus spot. And obviously, like I said before, they had 22 shots this game. And no matter them only having six on target, obviously equaling six saves. With that being said, it still allows him to get in a position to be mentally prepared to face those shots. And I think that does help him. And we have to give some credit, of course, to the back three as well, because they're putting a lot of pressure. They're forcing Leicester to shoot from that distance. And obviously the further the players are out, arguably the more comfortable Nyland's going to be, which was kind of weird though. I'm kind of backtracking on what I just said too, because the closer Leicester got, it was kind of weird. Typically from close range, and I don't have the stats on this, Nyland concedes a hell of a lot of goals from inside the box when obviously the opponent is in the box. But this game, it seemed like it didn't matter what it was. You could be 30 yards out or literally right in front of him. It just didn't matter, Danny.
Yeah, he had a great game. He just looked brilliant. I think all Villa fans seem to have a very similar idea of Nyland right now, in that he's a brilliant keeper. The only thing he needs to work on really is his distribution. But it looked, you know, he looked so safe in this game. The defenders, as you say, just blocking shots for fun as well. I think what really didn't help Leicester, again, and we've been saying this, is I don't think they're very good at playing against that three at the back. When you got Iheanacho, Perez and Maddison up top, obviously Vardy came on a little bit later on. You can stretch a couple of centre backs, right? You can stretch two centre backs. You can, you know, work them out. But when they start trying to work through this narrow channel, these narrow channels, you know, in between Ngoyo, I gotta stop calling him Ngoyo, Konza, Mings, that's his name, Konza, Mings and Hawes. They just seem to kind of go, wait a minute, we don't have quite as much space as we're used to. I think that's what happened to them.
Yeah, let's switch points of view here. Let's go to the top of the pitch, because Mbwana Samata made his Aston Villa debut. And Danny, how'd you feel about that? Because to be honest, I didn't notice him too much. Obviously, there is that one glaring missed opportunity that could have technically sealed it earlier on. Mm-hmm. But besides that, in my opinion, I didn't notice him much, but the presence of just having a capable striker seemed to open up so much for Grealish and really everyone else.
Oh, he ran the channels well. I mean, this goes back to people criticizing Wesley for not doing enough sometimes.
It's basics.
Yeah, exactly. It's basics. And we play with width. We play out wide. Samata comes back a little bit. He played the same role that Wesley plays. He played the same role. He came back, you know, and he supported the midfielders. He gave somebody to pass to, and then he distributed it back out wide. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They work as a pivot, the infamous strikers, don't they, by the looks of it. And he was energetic right from the off. He looked to win the ball. He was always looking for headers. And to be fair to him, in the air, I was pretty impressed with him. I thought he did well at winning balls. The only negative about his performance, in my eyes, was that miss. That was not getting at the end of that. It was a lot of pace on it. It was a lot of whip on it. Maybe he got a little bit nervous. But honestly, going forward, I'm pretty confident with him.
Oh, same here. Let's round out the goals here, and then we'll just get on to some closing thoughts, and we'll get on to the next topic of conversation. But anyways, of course, in the 72nd minute, Leicester did, of course, equalize, and I'm sure this is where the typical Villa fan thought, oh no, here we go again, because Harvey Barnes weaves through the Villa box with relevant ease on the left-hand side, fires a low cross across, obviously, the box. And, of course, like we said before, Kelechi Iheanacho loves to score against the Villa, and he makes it 1-1. And, Danny, is this a center-back error? Whose error is this? Because when I look at it, it kind of looks like it should have been Haas's man, but at the same time, it probably should have been the fullback. So it was one of those moments, in my opinion, where we look like we just completely switched off. Maybe we were too comfortable.
No, you know what? I think at the time, I think I tweeted that, it's poor, the defender should be stopping the cross. But you know what? It's a good goal. It's a good goal from Leicester. You know, they're losing. The onus is on them. We've got enough. We've got defenders back here, yeah? And all that's essentially happened is that I think they've charged at us. Madison's done well. And they've got a lot of men in the box. You know, you whip that ball across and it's anybody's guess what happens. It just so happens that Leicester get to it first. Should Hawes be a little bit stronger here? Probably. You know, should Gilbert, you know, be stopping that from coming in? Maybe. But I just think, again, you know, it's a good goal. It's well created. And there's not a lot you can say here. It was just a brilliant, brilliant ball on the left foot, to be fair.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those sucker punches where no matter if you're a Villa fan or whatever team you support, it's Leicester. They're a quality side. I think this match always kind of had that aura that both teams were going to score. It just kind of felt like a back and forth topsy-turvy game at points. And of course, Leicester arguably dominating in possession. That kind of gave that inevitability as well. Let's get on to the 93rd minute. We've already talked about this goal at length already, but again, this is Trezeguet, a man who arguably I don't think is the greatest finisher. a couple of goals that he scored this year have been a little fluky. And actually, to be honest, Danny, the chance he had before this where he ran around Evans and had a clear shot at goal, he just literally passed it to the keeper.
Well,
how did you feel about this sequence of play? Sorry to cut you off.
No, it's all right. I mean, I'll come back to you. Like, what did you think? Like, why was he so under pressure there? Like, was it just that he's soft? I mean, it's because it just felt a bit soft. I don't know what it was about that. Like, was he under pressure?
I don't really think he was. And even the goal he scored, it was a little scuffed because there was a second where I thought it might actually just miss that post and go past the goal. But to get to your point, I don't know if it's a... I feel like with Trezeguet, with his pace and his buildup, I feel like he puts so much almost agility into his sprint that when it gets to that final product, to that decision, do I pass, shoot, cross, whatever, I feel like at that point he doesn't necessarily always know what to do and panics a little bit. I kind of get that sense. I don't know how obviously you feel about it. We'll get to that in a second. But I just feel like it's that kind of split decision making that he's evidently lacking.
Yeah, it's funny as well, because I've always thought he was, like, right-footed, right? Yeah. Like, that's... Am I wrong in thinking that? But...
I don't know.
I've got to confirm this, because it seemed like he just kept on whacking everything with his left foot. What's interesting, Cole?
Yep.
What was really interesting to me was when he got brought on...
Yep.
Jack Grealish got moved on to the right-hand side. So was Dean Smith planning something here? Was there something that he's been working on with Trezeguet? Because Trezeguet looked really comfortable out on the left. He played really well from there. You said, you know, you mentioned he had that chance earlier on, and then he scored that goal straight after. I've always thought with Trezeguet, he's a very good player. He's very good at positioning. He's pacey, and he can play on either wing. Maybe he hasn't got a great ball on him, but the only thing that I think is missing from him is a good finish.
I'd say so.
What did you make of Dean Smith moving Grealish out wide for him then? Like, did you think there was something going on?
No, I think, well, personally, I think Trezeguet's best position probably is out left. Because technically that's where we signed him, right? Because El Ghazi plays on the right. So I think really it was probably more of a matter of your right winger is probably a little lethargic at this point. I don't want to take Grealish off the pitch. So let's move him over there. Let's get fresh legs on the left. And to be honest, just thinking about it now, it's a little bit more clear. I felt like the left-hand side of the pitch for the last 20 minutes was fairly open. So I think putting Trezeguet there and fresh legs on and still having the influence of Grealish cutting in from the right and doing whatever, basically whatever the hell he wants on the pitch, I felt like that was the ultimate demise, in my opinion, of Leicester in this match.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Pereira just looked lost a couple of times, right? Because Pereira is another one of them players, you know, who's a bit like Matty Target in the sense that, that he's just bombing up and down the pitch. Just bombing up and down the pitch. So immediately you've got Trezeguet on who creates so much movement. And you've got this massive space between Pereira and Soyuncu, which Villa have basically exploited. That's what it was, really. And I think it was just brilliant to see Villa, you know, taking advantage of that, because it was twice that happened. It was twice that open space got exploited, basically. I think Trezeguet comes around the left-hand side of Pereira at that point, but then, you know, he's created space out there too. And I just thought from that perspective, that's probably stuff that Dean Smith's probably worked on that, you know, you probably haven't even thought about.
Yeah, 100%. But anyways, we'll wrap that part of this edition of the Holtcast up. Danny, let's get your match ball.
Hold on, what about that cross? We've got to mention that ball one more time.
We're gonna mention the cross. Okay, right. Mention it one more time then.
listen, there's two key substitutions in that game. There's three key substitutions in that game, which win us that match. Cole, Trezeguet, Keenan Davis, and El Mohamedy. Now, Ahmed El Mohamedy gets so much stick, but how many times has he actually just pulled something out of nowhere?
True.
And his balls in are brilliant. I don't think anybody expected him to do what he did. Bit like Alan Hutton last season. Just pulled something out of nowhere that you just don't expect. And he's whipped it in from the middle of the area, middle of Leicester's area. And, oh, just a sublime ball, man. I don't ever remember seeing a better cross, man.
He's an excellent crosser of the ball. He's so underrated. And I think that's one of the main reasons he was kept in, because he's not going to play a lot. He does his job. But his delivery is, in my opinion, up there. It's so underrated, Danny.
Yeah, it is incredibly underrated. He's a brilliant backup, right back. And he doesn't deserve the stick that he gets. The Egyptian link-up works well. Brilliant finish from Trezeguet. Let's also mention how difficult that finish really is, because the ball's in the air. He's had to leap for it, and he's somehow managed to get enough power on it. So good finish from him. And also just a quick shout out to Keenan Davis, who I don't think we would have won if he hadn't come on, in all fairness, because his link-up play and his work rate since making his return from injury was absolutely magnificent. Should have got an assist when Trezeguet scoffed that first chance too.
Oh, 100%. I think there was some weird stat about Keenan Davis in this game as well, that he had twice as many touches as like any other striker on the pitch, and he was only on for 20 minutes.
Four dribbles, yeah.
I think that just shows what kind of striker center forward he is. Someone that's going to hold onto the ball and wait and set up that counter, and it made the difference. But anyways, Danny, we'll wrap this up for this part. Do you want to give me your match ball finally?
Sorry, man, I had to give a shout out to those boys. My match ball goes to Matt Target. I thought he had a brilliant game on that left hand side. Actually, no. I totally forgot about Nyland. Okay, I'm sure it's gonna go one of each way. So I'll make the Target case. Okay. Forgive me if I'm wrong. I feel like you're going to go for Nyland, but if you're not, it's cool. He can be the third one. Matty Target did brilliantly. He defensively was, you know, he had a good game. He worked well against Pereira. I thought he supported Courtney Hawes fairly well as well when Ayoze Perez was coming at him. And I just thought that it was his intensity in the first half. It was his intensity, certainly within the first 15 to 20 minutes, which really steamed Villa on. It was like he came on the pitch and he was the guy that said to everybody, listen, I want to be in the final and you're going to get in the final for me. This is our game. This is us getting into the League Cup final, and I don't want it any other way. And it was him that really shouldered the responsibility. It's usually Jack Grealish, but now it was Matty Target's game.
Oh, 100%. I think it's just great to have someone else essentially take the pressure off of Grealish's shoulders, even for a moment. Definitely helps. And for my match ball, it's a good thing I remember this, because I think last time I forgot to even give one. But I'm going to have to go with the man in goal, Nyland. He was always going to be, it was inevitable. The man made three excellent saves, top quality saves that ultimately kept Villa in this, and in my opinion is the reason why we won this game. Because without those saves, you'd have to argue it could have been 3 or 4-1. You just never know how that momentum switch could play into this game. Just seemed absolutely out of this world. I can't blame the one he conceded, obviously, because your defenders and ultimately your fullback should be doing a better job there. But yes, we'll have to give it to Nyland. But anyways, we do want to talk about something very quickly, because it's an interesting topic that's come up with, I don't want to say higher class managers, but managers of the bigger sides in terms of positioning. So your Manchester City's, your Spurs of this world, because, you know, Mourinho and Pep, they just love to be negative and whine about everything. Pep Guardiola in the last week or so has said a numerous amount of times that essentially the Carabao Cup should be scrapped, and essentially that FA Cup replays should be scrapped as well. Danny, how do you feel about that?
Well, listen, certainly, you know, there's voices from the, certainly from Jurgen Klopp as of late, you know, talking about, you know, the importance of these games and how, you know, physically they cannot put their full first teams out and that kind of thing. And I just feel as though this is all coming from the bigger teams. And it's like, hang on a second. You're up there. You're doing incredibly well because you've got the money to have a squad. You've got the money to be successful. And yeah, you're going to shoulder a little bit more responsibility. Talking down these cups, it really takes away the magic for sides like us. Yeah. Or other sides in the Premier League who aren't, you know, regularly playing European football, who aren't playing a ridiculous number of games. I think there was some stat that, like, Shrewsbury had played, you know, a couple of games less than Liverpool all season.
Yep.
And, you know, they're all professional footballers. They've all got to go through all of that. They've all got to go through that. And, yes, I understand the need for a rest, but don't complain. Switch your team up. You know, talk about squad rotation. That's fine. Look at Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola manages to do it. I have to say fair play to Pep Guardiola, because even if he has talked about, you know, scrapping replays and that kind of thing, he still goes out there in cup competitions, you know, fully wanting to win it, fully ready to win it. I don't know. I just feel as though if that's your opinion, kind of keep it to yourself, because, you know, it's,
yeah,
you know, you're not keep it to yourself necessarily, but just, you've got to be careful about how you talk about these competitions, because it means a lot to other teams.
I think the issue with me is, and especially when you look at Pep, the man, the club of Man City, they have like three squads in one. Like, you don't have to play Mahrez or Aguero or even arguably Jesus against lower sides or sides you don't deem to be worthy of those players playing. You have youth players there. You look at Man City's academy. It's supposed to be one of the best in the world nowadays. They, like, there's just no excuse. Look at Liverpool. Of course, they had a fixture issue with us. They played a completely young team of, what, U23s? Like, I'm not expecting that from Manchester City and some of these big sides. But plan smarter, because clearly when it comes to fixture congestion time, it seems like it's every year it's the same people complain about it. But I'm thinking, if you've been complaining about this for the last 3 years, if not more, why haven't you done anything about it yourself? Like, that's the issue with me that just doesn't make any sense. Because why take something away from clubs like Shrewsbury, Tranmere, Rovers, whoever, especially when the FA Cup, when you go non-league sides? Because especially when you look at non-league sides, them getting into the actual, I guess you consider big rounds, like, so the round of 32, 16, whatever, that's huge income for these clubs, even if they're in League One or League Two. That's massive for them when they go to Anfield or when they go to Stamford Bridge. That's huge. That's huge news for them.
Or forcing a replay at Anfield, or forcing a replay at
it's a great story.
Yeah, and you know, for a lot of those clubs, right, that 1-1 draw at their home ground, you know, taking them on that replay, that's massive. That's brilliant. We get to go to Old Trafford. We get to share the, you know, ticket receipts. You know, that is huge for teams. You can't take that away from them. Anyway, I know you got to, like, I know these teams have to prioritize. I get that. I totally get that. But again, I just find the complaining about it really weird. You do have youth players. You do have players who can step in. And, you know, I'm not being funny again, but this is why a lot of these guys are paid $100,000 a week. It's not easy. It's not supposed to be easy.
Exactly. Like, if you wanted easy, you would, I don't know what you'd do, but you would definitely have different avenues. Like, I think the biggest issue with me as well, before we wrap this topic up, I think it's the fact that, especially in England, you see a lot of people complain with the big sides. Oh, play your youth. They don't play these youth players. You let them go for nothing. Villa have been in that situation in the past where there's been a number of players. I look at the likes of Callum Robinson, especially a few players like that, where I was kind of hoping they would do something or maybe actually get a look in here and there for a few cup games, and they just didn't. They go away. They prove themselves, albeit at a lower level. And they do the job. And I think if you're not going to use these players, then you can't complain. But
it's game Danny, management, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But Danny, well, let's move on. Let's get to the big preview against Bournemouth, because I assume a lot of people listening to this want to maybe hear our thoughts on that as well. And at the end, we'll go over some quick Twitter questions, because I did reach out on the 7500 to Holt account. You can follow us there at 7500 to Holt and get involved, of course, every week when we tweet out. Of course, like I said, we are playing Bournemouth. Last time we played Bournemouth, we lost 2-1. Of course, that's the infamous match where we basically screwed ourselves over within the first 20 or so minutes, and it was catch-up game from there, and we couldn't ultimately scratch it back in time to get anything out of it. Danny, with that being said, how do you feel about Villa going into this game? Or are you at an all-time confidence this season? Are you a little weary? Because when you look at the standings and kind of, I guess, recent form within the last game or two, both sides are on kind of an even keel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Villa have been slightly better than Bournemouth as of late. I think you look at Bournemouth and, you know, they're certainly starting to look like one of those. A lot of people seem to think Bournemouth are kind of dead and buried, or not dead and buried, but one of the teams to go down. You ask most people, they'll say Norwich, Bournemouth, and Aston Villa. A lot of people. But I just think they haven't got a lot at the moment. They have lost most of, I think they've only won the one game since the start of the year. Lost 4-0 to West Ham, and lost 3-0 to Watford. I mean, fair play, they turned it around and beat Brighton. They looked a little bit better against Arsenal in the FA Cup, but, you know, as of late, you know, they even lost to Norwich, didn't they? They even lost to Norwich 1-0. I'm not super impressed with them right now. I'm not going to lie. But you know, you might look at that game against Brighton, especially like a rival side. You might look at that as a turning point, because of course both the Wilsons got goals, but I think more importantly it was Callum Wilson who finally got a goal back.
To be fair though, when I look at that Brighton game for Bournemouth, I just think that's ultimately Brighton's on a bit of a downturn. I don't think Brighton are as good as they are. And I think that's just kind of that club coming back down to reality a little bit, where that's a big game. That's a relatively local derby, would you say, Danny? So,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I think that game, one of those games can go really either way when it's local bragging rights and all that kind of stuff. But when I look at Bournemouth in particular, yeah, they've had a little bit of an upturn in terms of keeping games close, albeit losing. And of course, beating Brighton, I just don't see it. Overall, like, in my opinion, I think they're doomed next to Norwich. I think Eddie Howe has finally ran out of ideas.
Yeah, he's always been seen as the, you know, as the next great, young English manager, but he hasn't really managed to get Bournemouth to kick on. I don't know if that's necessarily his fault, but you know, Bournemouth, they're not a team with a massive amount of income. They're not a team with a massive amount of money. I think as well, you look at that side and you look at some of the signings that they've made, and you know, it's a bit questionable sometimes, isn't it? It is a bit questionable at times. Dominic Solanke, I don't know why they decided to sign him, really. You know, a lot of the defenders as well probably don't have an awful lot of Premier League experience. Actually, no, that's a bit of a lie. They didn't have an awful lot of Premier League experience before they got promoted. And maybe they're just finding their level. It feels a bit harsh, but they just don't seem to be a side which has any real identity to me. That's I think the main issue. You know, when you talk about them maybe losing ideas, it's starting to look like that, and they just haven't been scoring goals, Cole. They just haven't been scoring goals at all. I mean, apart from that game against Brighton where they scored three, I think before that you had to look back. I think you had to look back until Boxing Day before they scored another goal.
I believe so. There was like a 3 or 4 game drought where they honestly could not generate. They could barely generate shots, I think, even during that period. So,
If we're going purely Premier League, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 games. And those games included West Ham, Brighton, Watford, and Norwich. That is not a good forecast.
No. Not at all. I think the thing we do have to remember, and I don't want to poo-poo on Bournemouth too much, because the ultimate reality is, Danny, we're on 25 points. They're only on 23. We're in 16th. They're filling the final relegation spot in 18th. That's how tight it is from basically bottom to about, what, 14th, you'd say? Newcastle are, I think, at 30th, I believe. And there's just kind of that gap between ultimately Norwich and right. I can't remember who's directly below Newcastle at this point in time, but there's just that gap. Maybe it's Brighton. So it's going to be topsy-turvy, and you're going to see more clubs start being dragged into this as we go along. But if we're going to be a little bit more positive on the Villa spin of things and go away from Bournemouth for 2 seconds, in this match particularly, because we played on Tuesday, and in my opinion, there's no excuses. That's still a lot of time for recovery. Who do you think starts in goal? Do you think, depending on Reina's fitness, he comes back in, or do you roll with Nyland on this one?
I think if Reina's fit, Reina starts, most likely. I mean, they've both been brilliant, but they'll probably look at Reina and go, right, he's been the Premier League guy, especially for his leadership. No offense to Nyland. I thought he had a good game against Leicester, but I think you're more likely to know what you're going to get with Reina.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing. I also think as well, it's most likely that it's going to be this. I mean, if Bournemouth score, I think it will be from a set piece.
That's absolutely
generally what I'd expect. And if that's the case, I'd probably be a bit more excited to have Reina in goal.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fair enough. I feel the exact same way. Experience and more of a kind of cool head kind of wins out in this particular scenario. We need points. And to be honest, Danny, if we somehow win this, 28 points, that's a great turn in form, and that does give us a little bit of breathing room, because depending on how things go this weekend, I know I'm saying a lot of what ifs, that could really turn this season around.
Yeah, it could. I mean, listen, a couple of wins on the bounce for us could really do wonders in the Premier League. Really could. We're kind of in and out, aren't we, in terms of games at the moment. Don't tend to draw a lot. 3 wins in the last 6 is a pretty good return. I think if we can get in this game and get into Bournemouth's heads, then I think that would be big for us. If we score early, I think it's really gonna make Bournemouth suffer, because they don't look like they're able to score goals at the moment. Yes, they had that good game against Brighton, but I think apart from that, you know, they've also got injury issues. Joshua King's out, David Brooks out as well.
Big misses.
Massive misses. Massive misses. I think we should be able to do it. I think the question is now whether or not Keenan Davis starts up there with Grealish and El Ghazi, or whether it's Samatta. That's going to be the interesting one for me.
Well, what's Samatta, Danny? What's Samatta exactly? Let's get your score prediction, if I could, good sir.
2-1. Keenan Davis scores the winner.
Ooh, I like the confidence. Are we just going with 2-1 on your way? Because that we all got the prediction right on the,
oh my God.
On Tuesday
yeah.
night.
What on earth happened there? I think that's a Hulkcast first.
I don't think all of us have all predicted the same thing once this season, and we all got it right.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. It's the fact that every single one of us managed to guess the 2-1 victory.
Well, that's why people should listen to the Hulkcast, because we're always right. No, we're not. But if I'll say my score prediction here quickly, you know what? Before the Watford game, I probably would have maybe pegged this as the must win. So I'm going to stick that way. I was kind of thinking Watford might be the draw. Yeah. So I'm going to be uber confident here and say, it's at the Vitality too, though. Yeah, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to say 2-1 as well. Let's keep the 2-1 streak up. Maybe the other guys will join us and we'll get that right again. Because that would be one hell of a feat. I'm a little annoyed by the 2-1 prediction last time, because obviously there's a little bit of a competitive streak in all of us.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hoping like, a few other guys would get it wrong to put me back in it, because right now I think James is leading the predictions league right now. So good on him. But Danny, if we have some time here, shall we get to some Twitter questions and round out the whole cast?
Yeah, let's do that. Go,
awesome.
Go
okay. It. Let's get my trusty phone up here and we'll get to the first one. So thank you, of course, for getting involved and tweeting at us. It's greatly appreciated. The first one comes from Charlie AVCJX on Twitter, where he says, where does McGinn fit into this midfield / formation? He'd argue that Douglas and Nakamba both undroppable on recent form, and McGinn's ability to play in a two is questionable. Danny, how do you feel about that?
Oh, man, I love that question. McGinn's our best midfielder, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, his ability to play in a two is questionable. Actually, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's because of him.
I think it's just how well the competition is right now. Like, this is the best situation Villa can be in my opinion, where even your best midfielder can't even potentially get into the side because everyone else is playing so well. That's amazing to see.
Yeah, for sure. I think what you do is, I think, again, this might be the most boring answer ever. I think you just stick or twist, don't you? Douglas, yeah. Luiz and Nakamba at the moment are working very well together, so you can't drop either of them, really. If Dean Smith looked at that team and went, right, I'm happy now with the way Mings and Konsa are performing, I think we can go back to a back four, and maybe he sticks McGinn in that midfield with Douglas, Luiz and Nakamba. That, again, though, that leaves Grealish out wide. that's the other problem you've got there. But I think what you do is, as I said earlier, stick or twist. Douglas, Luiz and Nakamba, they stay playing. If McGinn gets his opportunity and he plays better than them, then you stick him in the team. I think you rotate. I think rotation is key. This is what happened with Drinkwater. He played a couple of games. He looked okay. But when Douglas, Luiz came off the bench, he looked better. So this is generally how football works, and I think that's the only way we can do it.
That's fair enough. Let's get to the next one. Actually, I'll skip this one because a guy was just asking if we liked his toque.
This guy asked for it seemed like he asked for promotion.
Yeah. No, slide into my DMs. I accept paid advertisement on my Twitter, so if you want to do that, feel free. I'm an open agent. But anyways, let's get on to the next one. Thank you all for, of course, who tweeted, like I said earlier. Let's get to AVFC regular and friend of the Hulkcast, Trevor Hood, Big Trev. His question is this momentum real? And his comment is, I felt Samata looked comfortable out, seemed to be in forward positions, and we've all been craving. I'm reading a little bit slow right now because I just realized I had my little screen protector in front of my Yeti mic in front of me, and it was in front of my phone too, and I couldn't see, so that's not the best way to read. But Danny, is his question valid? Is this momentum real?
I mean, yeah, sure. Look, it's two wins in the 90th minute out of nowhere. Wait, is this a question about Samata, or is this a question about our momentum?
I honestly, I don't know, but let's turn it into the whole club's momentum, because
Right.
honestly, I think there is. Yeah, it's last minute glory and it's getting things at the last breath of a game, but nonetheless, it's positive and it's points, and that's what we need.
Well, let's look at this, right? There's a couple of things here which have improved for us. We learned to play without a striker, did okay without one, right? Mm-hmm. Now we've got a striker. We had a situation where our substitutions were quite poor. Dean Smith not able to change games in the same way that other teams had against us. But now, all of a sudden, the substitutions are working. Douglas Luiz has changed the game on his own a couple of times.
True.
And El Mohamedy comes on and, you know, and Trezeguet, obviously. The two of them come on and even Keenan Davis. I got to throw that one out there as well. Now, Dean Smith's throwing out substitutions and they are working and they are, you know, going to our favour. We've had a couple of key refereeing decisions go our way.
I know what you're getting into right now.
I'm not going to go into it just yet.
Okay. But
what I'm trying to say is, things are going well for us. We've got to ride that wave. We've got to ride that confidence, and the players look a lot less nervy because of it. So if your question is whether that momentum is real or not, I would say yes, it is. We look so much a better side at the moment, and we're learning, and it's just good to see that.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. Let's get to your point here, because I feel like you're itching to say it, buddy.
Leicester should have got a penalty in that game earlier. Whilst we're on the topic of Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Then James Maddison, in a move that I don't think I've ever seen a Premier League player do this before.
Right? Can I compare this for a moment? Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
It's like that kid on the schoolyard who got picked last, and then just basically, obviously he's playing now, but he's still bitter about it, so he's just going to continue to whine about it even like 3 years after it happened. It's just going to scar him.
Bro.
Like he always got picked last.
Yeah, bro, what's your problem, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
He's James Maddison. He doesn't need to prove anything, bro. You're out of the League Cup. Sure, focus on getting on the Champions League, mate. That's where you're going to be playing next season. You know, the fact that he's come on a day later and thrown his toys out the pram, like you just said, is absolutely mental to me. He shows the video of Nakamba putting his hand up in the air. Mm-hmm. He did make his body bigger, right? That ball whacks his hand and it stops the ball from, you know, going goalward. I don't know if that's going in, but it does stop that. Nonetheless, do you want me to read this Twitter out, this tweet out from James Maddison?
Yeah, but my question before that is, would this have a different reaction to most fans, Villa fans or not, if this was, say, posted last night? Would it be more acceptable?
No, I don't think so. I could
just see it more last night, in my opinion, in terms of it just happened, you're bitter, you're still in that moment. But now I'm thinking, dude, it's literally like midweek. You have a big Premier League game on the weekend. You're a pro footballer. Show some more professionalism. I like the passion. I understand he's upset, but come on, there's bigger things to cry about. And in my opinion, there's no, like, it's just kind of one of those, like, the pot calling the kettle black situations where I'm thinking, oh, so Leicester haven't had anything that's questionable in a similar manner happen this season? Like, come on.
It's bad anyways, either way. Bad either way.
Right? Read the tweet, please.
Okay, so he says, fair play to Aston Villa for getting to the final and not making any excuses, but how a Premier League referee watching this from multiple angles several times comes to the conclusion that this isn't a penalty baffles me. James, I take your point. Absolutely. But the fans have probably said this. You don't need to come out there and make a comment. He's made himself look silly, and I don't know what's going to happen to him now. I don't know if he's going to get in trouble for it or not, but the tweet's still up there. It's 1 a.m. now. It was up at 6:35. That's not even taking into account that Twitter's copyright policy likes to strike everything. I don't know how it stands. I don't know where it stands with this. But yeah, I just think you just don't tweet about that stuff as a professional footballer. It's just not the done thing to do. But I mean, do you think it's acceptable? Do you think if you've had something like that deny you in a key game, do you not think that you're within your own right to come out and address your opinion?
I think you can address it, but there's other ways to address it. You can address it internally with whether it's your teammates, your work colleagues, whatever. And there's also a way that he could have maybe spoke to the referee after. Maybe he did. I don't know. I missed that potentially. Or he could have done an interview after and said, well, this call, blah, 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 and briefly mentioned it. But to do it this way after the fact, like, it's just clutching straws. And the best part of this whole tweet is basically he's trying to say he's not bothered, but like, yeah, you're clearly triggered if you're mentioning it. Like, it's just, it, like, how many times I want to facepalm right now is ridiculous, because it just makes no sense. And in my opinion, it just kind of screams immaturity, albeit he is still young. I think it's a player with still a lot to learn in that regard. No one's perfect, and I'm sure there's going to be bigger news in like a few days when it's the weekend, and that'll kind of be brushed aside eventually. But it just seems like he is bitter, and to not say he is not bitter is basically just proving to everyone that he is.
I think the other thing is that, you know, it's not helping. It's really going to put him, it's really going to sort of like look bad on him as well, because there's this media obsession at the moment of Maddison versus Grealish, isn't there? I think Sky Sports put up a video yesterday of every single Grealish and Maddison goal of the season.
Did you see that one picture? And it's like Grealish is, I think he has the ball, or he's running in front of Maddison, and it's like a comment for Grealish saying, "I'm taking my dog for a walk" or something like that.
God, no. But you know, it's that fake rivalry that's been brought up. Like, which one of them is going to get picked for England? They're both good players, man. They're both good players. But Jack Grealish wouldn't. The thing is, Jack Grealish would never act like that on Twitter. What I want to ask you as well, actually, because you're, you know, obviously from North America and everything, like, Premier League footballers have this reputation for being super media trained and, you know, not coming out and saying things. Like, is it a bit different over there, like, in terms of athletes, or?
Yes and no. I think the best comparison and like the worst would be, I'd say they're all media trained in extent. You do have a few here, especially in the hockey culture, because I like, Canada is hockey mad, it's kind of obvious. There's a few different people where, for example, there's a hockey player, retired hockey player called Paul Bissonnette. But basically he was like kind of bottom of the barrel in terms of his quality for his team. So he kind of made more of his notoriety off of Twitter, kind of being quirky on there, just getting involved and all that kind of stuff. Now he runs a very successful hockey podcast, probably one of the biggest in the world, off of that. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and to relate it back to the question, probably wasn't as media trained as everyone else. There's instances that everywhere where people are going to kind of go off of that kind of typical yes, no, here's the quo pro answer to essentially, I'm just going to say my opinion and I'm going to basically leave it out there for whoever to say their piece. I respect that. But again, I think my final thought on this is just there's a time and a place, and that wasn't the time and the place.
Should it have been a handball, though? Should it have been a penalty?
Wow, it's clear as day. Like, but I think there was a fair point to when it's tough, because the way his arms are, yes, they should probably be behind his back, but they're also so close to his body. I'm thinking, like, if I put my hands on my face, because they were pretty close to, was it Nakamba?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if I put my hands on my face and I block a shot and it hits my hand, is that really a handball? Like,
I mean, if it's making your body bigger, yeah. if it was in front of his face.
Yeah, there's the argument as well, though, Danny, that ball was probably going to be absolutely skied over the net. And we obviously don't know the exact trajectory, but it did look like it wasn't going to go in.
No, that wasn't going in.
Yeah, so I think they're just clinching at straws. But anyways, Danny, let's wrap this up here. Do you want to give any of your last thoughts?
Yeah, up the Villa, man. We're going to Wembley. This is just amazing. It's good to see. It's good to see. Good to hear. And honestly, I've had goosebumps since last night, and I just think it's just good to feel good again. It's great to see two last minute winners from Villa. We're starting to drop that whole attitude of being chokers, aren't we? We're no longer doing that. We're improving week on week. Transfer window's closing in a couple of days. Are we going to sign anybody? I don't know. But
it's going to be exciting.
As it is, I think we've got the squad to stay up.
Well, we'll leave it at that because that's what I believe as well. But anyways, this has been another Holtcast. We're only going to make this about half an hour, but Danny, we've been rambling for an hour. Like,
sorry, man.
No, it's all good because when we're having conversations like this, I love it. But anyways, like I said before, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening to another edition of the 7500 to Holtcast. I said it right this time. Of course, you can find us and listen to us on the website at I said it four times, but anyways, you know what I mean. 7500toholt.com. Find us and them on Twitter at 7500toholt. You can find Danny on Twitter at Razajourno. You can find me, Cole Penham, on Twitter at Talk Aston Villa. And of course, we all make up the 7500toholt Holtcast. Don't forget, guys, we're going to Wembley and, of course, up the Villa.